From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Richmond, California.
San Jose.
Union City.
Eastside. Jackson.
I'm from the Campbell area.
Hayward.
Coming up, we'll find out why shipping containers converted into houses are causing a big fuss in West Oakland.
What they had next door in that lot was like a shanty town.
Then we'll hear the backstory of one of the Bay Area's most versatile jazz musicians, Noel Jukes.
Somebody called me to play a bass gig behind a piano player one time, and I said, well, I'd love to do it, except I don't have a bass.
And we'll get close with an instrument that inspires a special kind of devotion.
I dream about planets where everybody plays the saxophone.
That's coming up today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. San Francisco is the nation's most expensive city for housing rentals. It's followed by New York, Boston, and now Oakland. Rent here has jumped 20% in the last year, and that's leading some people to get creative about their housing situations. There are people living in converted closets, in RVs, but what if you want to create your own out-of-the-box house?
We have an on-demand water heater. And we're just going to put one of the water tanks up on top of the container and use gravity feed to pull water down into the container.
YouTube is full of DIYers like Heather Stewart showing off how they convert things like buses and shipping containers into homes.
It also doubles as our toilet area. When you have to go to the bathroom, you just use this. You lift the seat up, you can go to the bathroom.
But some experimenters are finding that city zoning laws aren't set up to deal with their innovations. What happens when standard housing codes and building permits meet non-standard housing solutions? KALW's Chris Hambrick reports.
On a sunny Saturday afternoon, I catch up with Luke Eisman and Heather Stewart in West Oakland. Their dogs follow at their heels as they show me around a building and a lot they own with four others. Eisman and Stewart plan to drill together sideboards for raised garden beds today.
There's this one style called square foot gardening, where you do a 4 foot, typically a 4 foot by 4 foot bed, and then you can get away with making it only 6 inches deep.
According to the city of Oakland, a garden is about the only thing that's allowed on most of this triple lot. But Eisman and Stewart moved here along with a few souped up shipping containers that they intended to live in, along with a number of friends. Stewart fills me in on the first 3 weeks.
I would get back from work at night and there's a bonfire and there's all my friends sitting around the bonfire and we hang out and, you know, like talk. And then we can all go to our own private spaces.
What's it like inside a converted shipping container? I got to peek in one, even though we had to go somewhere else to see it. Stewart and Eisman outfit them for others. For a price tag of about $5,000, think hardwood floors, big windows, and a full, although mini, kitchen.
What size is this?
So it's 160 square feet. It's a 20-foot container that's 8 feet wide. It's going to have French doors on the left side of it. And then my bed is lofted, mostly so the dogs can't secretly climb in bed with me at night. And also because it creates a more space underneath.
The lot where they're gardening is on a block dotted with industrial buildings, but it's mostly residential. And after that 3 week honeymoon, neighbors began to complain to the city about the container house village.
We talked to some of the neighbors about it and they were like, well, it's a good idea, but just not next to me.
Neighbors like Aura and Willie Green. Their single-story, celery-colored house sits very close to the fence bordering the Eisman and Stewart lot. The Greens say their discomfort isn't with something new, but how that something new affected their quality of life, like constant construction noise.
It was one Sunday morning, straight up 8 o'clock in the morning. They were slamming and bamming and dropping things right next to my bedroom. And so I go over to our fence because, you know, you can't see them on the other side because they have all this stuff. And I asked them, could they please, you know, lower the noise and stuff because it's bright and early Sunday morning. They laughed.
And remember the bonfires that Stewart liked so much? Green has a different perspective.
Instead of disposing of things, she said they were burning things. This is what, 1 or 2 o'clock at night, burning stuff. And then we're here in the house and we're smelling smoke. The fire was so big that if it got out of control, you're asleep and you may never wake up because they have a fire.
And according to Green, the way the Container Village dealt with their waste was also a huge bone of contention.
I'm seeing this stuff coming from under the fence, and I didn't know what it was, but my plants was looking pretty good, you know, and stuff like that. And then I go through one day looking, oh no, it's sewage. It was like the worst, like a dead body was buried in the front of our house. You get out the car and gag.
Green says she's somewhat sympathetic to new concept housing projects, but that's not what this felt like to her.
What they had next door in that lot was like a shanty town, a free-for-all shanty town.
That's when the Greens and their neighbors called the city. Rachel Flynn is director of planning and building for the city of Oakland.
They didn't have permits, so the first thing is they have to tell us what they're doing on the site. So if they haven't gotten zoning approval and building permits and utility, then they have to come in and tell us what they're doing. And up to that point, we just have to shut down the site.
Stewart and Eisman say they had to clear the lot and remove the containers or start paying $1,200 a day in fines. That's where the bureaucratic limbo comes in. On the one hand, they can't build out containers to sell to others because that qualifies as commercial manufacturing and this area is zoned residential. On the other hand, the city says they can't live in the containers on the site either because they haven't complied with housing codes. Flynn, with building and planning, disagrees that these converted containers are houses in the first place.
It was built to ship things in.
Right.
They could turn it into a house, but they haven't. I mean, they haven't shown us how to do that.
Okay.
I mean, in their minds, that's a house. But you can't just, nobody can just build something in the city and not get approvals.
Is the city of Oakland specifically in support of alternative housing? Or?
Sure. Yeah. Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
Is there some specific way that your office is encouraging it?
No, it's not what we do. That's what the private sector does. They want to make money. They want to be inventive. They want to be creative. They want to be entrepreneurs. We enforce codes. That's what we do.
These codes aren't going to stop Eisman and Stewart. They say they'll keep at it and continue to share knowledge and be very public about documenting it because they say the regulations will only change once people see that it can work as low-cost alternative housing.
I mean, it's one thing to give lip service to sustainable development, but then, you know, people who are actually not trying to live in corporate-built structures have a much more difficult time of it. And that's a shame because Oakland should lead the way on this. And it's not that we're asking for any material support from the city. We're just asking for them to get out of our way, really, like more than anything.
Eisman and Stewart aren't the only ones who want to experiment with a new housing style. Lured by the low cost, other people want to live in shipping containers too.
I remember when the container came, we were like, wait, no, that's not our container. That's small. It's like too small to be our container. And we actually like saw it on the ground and we were like, oh yeah, this is our container.
That's Camille McCrae and her boyfriend Colin Parsons. Friends of friends hooked them up with Eisman and Stewart.
We got it about a week and a half ago.
They're planning the layout using paper models and finding that some things are better in theory than in practice, like using magnets to add cabinetry on the inside.
We have to actually special order magnets if we're gonna do anything with them. And then we're like, oh, so if we put insulation and plywood on the inside, then we're not gonna be close enough to the steel to actually use magnets on the inside. So like, there's all these little gotchas that come up.
Parsons and McCrae think it'll take them about 6 months to make this container fully livable for them, but they really view it as a lifetime project.
I try to think of it as an experiment. Like, you know, we spent around $2,000 on this steel box. And like, hopefully we can turn it into something that we can either use for a long time or we can sell.
McCrae says they don't know where they'll ultimately put their container house.
I would like to live somewhere where I can walk outside and sort of have green space. So that's my goal for the like long-term future.
Whether Eisman and Stewart or Parsons and McCrae, people are obviously looking for housing alternatives. Until a framework for grassroots housing developments can be built, challenges over zoning issues are bound to be repeated. For Cross Currents, I'm Chris Hambrick.
This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. Living in the Bay Area can require some serious resourcefulness. Well, there's a group of folks who are pretty used to that. Jazz musicians. One artist has been playing here for over 50 years by putting together a patchwork of gigs with a special set of skills. His name is Noel Jukes. Reporter David Ross went up to Marin County to get his story.
A stone's throw from Highway 101 in Greenbrae, just south of San Rafael, are several storage yards. They're filled with old cars and forklifts, and in one of the yards is Noel Jukes' music studio. There's barely enough space to walk around because the room's filled with instruments. A grand piano, an organ, a bass, electronic keyboards and computers.
Somebody called me to play a bass gig behind a piano player one time, and I says, well, I'd love to do it, except I don't have a bass, you know. So I went out and bought me a cheap K and ended up working quite a bit down in Fresno behind this piano player. Then just recently, well, about 3 years ago, I got the Baldwin, and I started really thinking about maybe spending some time on piano, you know. As I just progressed through playing gigs, you know, on saxophone, somehow somebody asked me, well, do you double on flute, you know, and I like to do some bossa novas and sambas and stuff, you know.
Jukes grew up in a family of performers. His uncle was Delos Jukes, whose rich bass voice was featured in some 300 Hollywood films, including The Wizard of Oz, The Music Man, and The Ten Commandments, in which his voice was the voice of God.
I will put my laws into their hearts, and in their minds will I write them.
But for the most part, the Jukes family lived in Utah. Noel Jukes traveled with them from town to town playing music.
They'd have street dances. They'd rope off a street. My grandfather had a hay wagon, and we would ride around on this hay wagon from one little farm town to the other playing music, you know, like on a warm summer night, you know. And the first money I ever made was playing a little guitar on this hay wagon, and my grandfather gave me a silver dollar, you know. I says, hey, there's money to be made here, you know.
Jukes left the family band when he was 18 years old to play jazz in California. He's played in the Bay Area since 1964, and like most jazz players, Jukes' schedule is not made up of lucrative recording sessions, high-profile concerts, and prestigious festival appearances. Most of his gigs are in small clubs before senior citizens or student audiences, or at private parties, like a recent engagement at JoJo's restaurant in Oakland, playing saxophone. Bassist Carla Kaufman joined Jukes at JoJo's.
I've been on gigs where I was playing bass and he was playing sax and clarinet, maybe trumpet, and he decided that he wanted to play bass right in the middle of the tune, so he played some bass, and then I think on the same song I started playing bass again, he started playing piano. So, and he can do all those instruments well.
Jukes has been gigging in the Bay Area since the mid-60s, but like most of his fellow jazz musicians, a great deal of his time is spent by himself, composing at the piano or computer or practicing.
A lot of people are concerned mainly about material wealth and security and status, for one thing, I think. But once you see the richness of the music, you can see that that's a life study. It's something you want to spend your life learning how to do and working with, you know. It's a universe into itself, you know. It's a process that we prefer over almost anything else, I think, you know.
For Cross Currents, I'm David Ross.
One, two, one, two.
Jukes has a regular gig every Tuesday night at the Sausalito Seahorse in Marin County. More information is at kalw.org and click on Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. The Bay Area has a special devotion to the saxophone. It's evidenced by the overflow crowd that showed up Sunday at the St. John Coltrane African Orthodox Church. It's a place dedicated to the honoring of one of the most significant and spiritual saxophonists who ever lived. But the people who run the church are facing eviction. Across the bay in Berkeley, there's another institution that treats the saxophone with special reverence. Alyssa Greenberg has the story.
When Eric Drake sits at his workbench after the sun goes down, it can feel as if nothing else exists. Only the sharp sound of metal striking metal and the windows mirroring his reflection. In a way, that's what his repair shop is. A little world of its own.
This is a big part of my job, just this kind of painstaking and fitting of brass pieces. It's all sort of 19th century mechanical technology.
Saxology is Eric's all-purpose saxophone supply and repair mecca in North Berkeley.
The sound of the saxophone, number one, is like the most beautiful, amazing sound next to the human voice, I think. The shape of the saxophone, the brass is such a great material.
The shop is funky and grimy in a lived-in way. Out front, photos of jazz masters share space with political posters. Mean-looking machinery lines the walls.
This is machinist Visa is attached to the floor, as the name might suggest, and I have a bunch of sort of medieval-looking steel, they're called mandrels, which I use to push dents out of the inside of saxophones.
The whole place oozes this mix of steampunk wonder and vintage decay. More than 70 saxes sit in cases on shelves or out, leaning against a wall, beside rows of mouthpieces and extra keys. There's a grimacing wooden mask. Next to that, a bull's head made out of gears. And that's not to mention the figurine collection.
Gosh, I don't know. This looks like maybe it's Porky Pig playing a saxophone. And then there's the Eminem guy playing a saxophone. Of course, we have Lisa Simpson playing the saxophone.
Eric inherited the collection from his business partner, Jay Clark. The two started the shop together 11 years ago, before Jay passed away soon after from a sudden stroke. It was a hard time for Eric, but he stuck with it, and now saxology is beloved for many musicians. Berkeley seems uniquely suited to host a little world as specific as a saxophone repair shop. Berkeley High is famous for producing saxophonists. Jasmine Joshua Redman, for example, is a Yellow Jacket. There's also the university, and plenty of pros hail from here. They discover saxology when they need a tune-up, then they tell their friends about it, and word spreads.
Occasionally, people come up from L.A., and then there is sort of a New York connection. We've got a fair amount of sort of bi-coastal players that grew up in the Bay Area and come back to the Bay, and you know, I'll do repairs for them.
Beyond general repair, Eric has also learned mouthpiece refacing, a rare skill. He's also mastered the art of saxophone engraving, a niche within a niche.
I mean, if you give me a drawing of it, I can translate it into an engraving. The weirdest thing I ever engraved was this figure that this guy that I know, he calls Alien Bear. It was basically like sort of like a teddy bear with a control panel on his chest.
Skills aside, though, there's no doubt that the biggest factor in the store's success is Eric himself. With his corny sense of humor, soul patch, and long silver ponytail, he exudes this hippie wisdom and a consuming love of music and mechanics. It doesn't take much to convince him to take out a saxophone and play.
mothballs in there. Guess that means it doesn't come out that much.
For Eric, playing saxes and fixing them, engraving them, returning them to their owners, it's a way to transform that love into action. Still, someday soon, he's planning to leave the store to his apprentice. His true destiny, he says, lies elsewhere. He's thinking about picking up and moving to Peru, but his daydreams take him further.
I dream about planets where everybody plays the saxophone, you know, which I'm sure are out there, lots of planets out there.
Until then, he'll continue building a smaller version of that planet here. In Berkeley, I'm Alyssa Greenberg for Cross Currents.
Oh man, I can usually play that right every time. Now you put a microphone in front of me and I just can't do it.
Alyssa Greenberg is a student at the UC Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. This week, we're featuring poems from participants of Remix Your Life, an arts program run by Youth Radio. These poems address the relationship between the natural world and city life. Jalen Burns grew up in Oakland, and she imagines a conflict between young people and police officers from the perspective of one of the city's parks.
I'm big. I'm full of opportunity. I have something that attracts danger. It's Friday morning and the wind is mildly blowing. The birds are chirping in all of my trees. Dogs barking across my yard at each other. There are children and parents playing all around and laughing. It feels so good to see days like this. A few hours go by and all of the friendly people are gone. These young guys in black who meet here every day are sitting on one of my benches conversing about how they hate the pigs. I can feel something bad coming. The inside of my heart where they're sitting is aching. I'm hoping and waiting for them to leave, but more young men show up. They start arguing about race and how blacks don't belong here. I've heard this argument 1,000 times. Someone throws a punch. Blood's racing down one of the young men's face. And I know what's going to happen next. This is the worst part of my nights. It seems to never stop. One of the guys in blue pulls a gun from behind his back and shoots 2 of the 3 men in black. They all scatter, and the wind suddenly stops blowing, and time has stopped. These 2 young men are in my heart, bleeding their lives and souls out. No one comes to help. And their last breaths were taken after fighting over the rights of black people. Now the wind's whistle is soothing. I have my right-hand tree clean the blood with his leaves. The next morning, things are abnormal again. People are happy, probably unknowing of the fact that they're standing in the same place, number 203 and 204 died. They were, and will forever stay in my heart. But I want to know this. Will it ever end?
That's poet Jalen Burns, a participant with the Remix Your Life arts program at Youth Radio. Find a link to more pieces from Youth Radio in Oakland at our website, kalw.org, and click on Cross Currents. You've heard from us. Now we'd love to hear from you. Email us with your comments and suggestions at news@kalw.org. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at KALW. It's because of you that we can proudly say we're listener-supported public radio. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This is the Black Cedar Trio from San Francisco. They'll be performing new commissions on Friday at Old First Church in San Francisco, starting at 8 p.m. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.